You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Connecting the dots. We've had a 23-hour hiatus, but now we're back on the air as we do every day, Monday through Friday, at this hour, to talk about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective. And we are here today with my Tuesday co-host, Mr. Michael Litchens. Hey, Michael.
Hello. Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm swell. I'm just sitting here watching it rain more and more because that's all it ever does. And so things are going well. And we are also here. We got a special guest. Our guest today is my good friend, Mr. Brandon Vogt, V-O-G-T. You can find his books, by the way, out there at Amazon. You can find, for example, Return. How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church. He's also written, he put together a book a few years ago that I was involved in called The Church and New Media. And he seems to, I don't know, you come out with like a new book like every, I don't know, like 3 days, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, it just seems like you crank books out. And you've got your hand in all these projects. He's the content director for Bishop Robert Barron's Word on Fire Catholic Ministries. So all that stuff that you see come pouring out of Bishop Barron's elvish workshop of Catholic theological tidbits, that's all passing through Brandon's hands because that's the work that he's done. And he's been featured on a bunch of different media outlets, including NPR, Fox News, CBS, EWTN, Vatican Radio, Our Sunday Visitor, National Review, Christianity Today. He's also a regular guest on Catholic Radio, for example, Connecting the Dots. He's also the founder of a cool website called StrangeNotions.com, which you should go and check out. And it was set up specifically for dialogue between Catholics and atheists. I have a few atheist friends that I've gotten to know over the years, and we have fun back and forth. And recently, by the way, Brandon got named one of the top 30 Catholics under 30. That's never going to be possible for me. It hasn't been possible for 28 years, and I'm not getting any younger. Anyway, Focus named him one of the top 30 Catholics under 30, and one of the top 24 Catholics to follow on Twitter. So just a hot commodity. How you doing, Brandon?
Mark, I'm doing well. I'm glad to be here with you.
Well, I'm glad you're here. You've been doing so many cool things for really ever since I got to know you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I had a good time hanging out with you in Baltimore a few years back.
I remember it well. I remember all of us Catholic bloggers sitting around a table. I remember our good friend Kevin Knight ordering a glass of milk at the bar.
Yes, as did I, to the great derision of a number of people. Tom McDonald has never really let me live that down. And Leah Labresco gave me a hard time, too. I was traumatized, and I've never really got... It's a painful thing, and I don't talk about it too much.
I'm sorry to bring it up. It struck me as a very Chestertonian thing, you know, that right before he married his wife, he stopped and he got a gun, a revolver, and I think he stopped for milk as well. And so it always struck me as the two of you living out the Chestertonian ideal in this bar.
Yes, that is what I was doing. So tell me about how did you wind up getting involved working with Bishop Barron? One of the big thrills of my life was having dinner with you guys when I was in Chicago one time. That was like getting a baseball signed by Babe Ruth. How'd you wind up working with Bishop Barron, then Father Barron?
Yeah, at the time, Father Barron. So I was a Protestant when I was in college, when I first came across his YouTube videos. So like many people, I hear from them almost every day now that I work at Word on Fire with him. Many people come across him on YouTube and then start reading his articles and maybe his books. And it was the same trajectory for me. I just became infatuated with him because he was one of the very few serious-minded Catholic leaders that I had come across, who not only was sharp theologically, but also philosophically, and spoke this kind of language that I found deeply attractive. And so after I became Catholic, I just started reading his work, following him even more. And pretty soon, through a wide variety of circumstances, I ended up writing this book, which you mentioned earlier, The Church and New Media, which was an edited collection of many different contributors. You, thankfully, were one of them. And Bishop Barron, I just reached out to him. We had never talked before. He didn't know me from Adam, but I just sent him an email and said, "Hey, I'm putting together this book on Catholic social media. I'm trying to get some of the best Catholic bloggers and YouTubers and podcasters, and I'm wondering if you'd be able to participate." And he replied and said, "Well, you know, I'm pretty busy, but let me see." And then eventually, though, he did respond and said, "Yeah, I think I can." And he wanted to write this essay on the so-called YouTube heresies. And so it was an essay on some of the major blocks that he detected interacting with people on YouTube. So whenever he had conversations with atheists, agnostics, former Catholics, what are the main heresies or what are the main theological blocks that are keeping people away from God? And here's a funny story. I haven't really told many people this, that at the time he had produced a couple YouTube videos on the so-called YouTube heresies. He had given a couple lectures on it. So it was kind of in his wheelhouse of things that he'd been talking about for a year or two. And so when he proposed this for the book, when he said, "Oh, I think I could do something on the YouTube heresies," I replied saying, "Well, hey, that's great, you know, but I'm wondering if people have already heard about these heresies since you've spoken and written about them so often. You know, I'm not sure it'd be great, or I'm not sure it'd be the best idea to recover these tired YouTube heresies." Now, I said it that way because I was implying that the YouTube heresies themselves were tired, that they've been rehearsed over and over on YouTube, that we keep getting the same objections and whatever. He took it to mean that his own ideas were tired and that I was insulting him. So he got really upset, and his assistant, Father Steve, who I now work for and close with, sent me a very terse email saying, "I really think you owe him an apology. He's really offended that you called his ideas tired, blah, blah, blah." And so it was a tumultuous start to our relationship because it began with a purported insult. But from there, things got a lot better. We started working on different projects over the years. He contributed to a couple websites I was working on. He invited me to write some study programs for some projects he was working on. And then eventually it got to the point where we were working together pretty often. And he said, "You know, why don't you just come work for us full time at Word on Fire?" And at the time I was working as a mechanical engineer. I had a nice, comfy, secure job. And I thought, well, you know, what would I be doing? And he said, "Well, I don't know, but we'd figure that out." So it's kind of this great leap into the world of full-time Catholic ministry. I'm sure you know, it's not a place you go to chase comfort and security and ease.
Well, you know, but it's the hot chicks and cocaine and money that really make it all worth it.
I mean, yeah, this seven-figure signing bonus he was holding out to me was an irresistible offer.
That's why I went into the rock-solid world of Catholic writing.
You're right. But so that was 3 years ago, and I accepted the offer, and it's just been one of the best decisions of my life, working with Bishop Barron. I think I say this not just because I work for him, but I think he's the greatest evangelist of our generation. And so I feel like I've kind of been thrust providentially into this role where, with my skills with the new media and helping him get his message out, I've sort of become a John the Baptist figure to his prophetic evangelization. So whatever I can do to amplify his voice, I feel like is part of my calling.
I have a huge admiration for Bishop Barron. I think he's fantastic. One of the things that, you know, there are two great evangelizing figures on the world stage right now. One of them is him, and the other one is the Holy Father. And the thing that just absolutely staggers me are people who, you know, search the world stage or search the national stage, and come away with one conviction that the greatest danger that Catholics face today is the Holy Father and Bishop Barron. And it's like, what's wrong with you? How can you think that? That's just crazy to me. Yeah. So I'm tickled that you guys are working together because you're another one of my favorite people.
Likewise. Thank you.
Well, yeah. So that makes me so happy. And you've got your own irons in the fire because you have limitless energy, apparently, and never sleep. And so, you know, you've been working on some cool projects yourself. I was wondering if you could talk about what inspired you. Well, we're coming up against a break here, but when we return, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the work that you've been doing with Strange Notions, your website for dialogue between Catholics and atheists, or perhaps it's the website for dialogue with creatures from the Upside Down on Netflix series. I'm not really clear. But anyway, we'll be back right after this, listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We are here today with Michael Litchens and Mr. Brandon Vaught. And we'll be back to talk about Strange Notions and Claritas U and all kinds of other cool stuff right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Dots. I'm your host, Shay. And we are here today with Michael Litchens and Mr. Brandon Vaught. Mr. Brandon Vaught is half of a team who should really be in a graphic novel and just call themselves the Bishop and Florida Man. Yeah, there's a whole Neil Gaiman story there somewhere, I'm sure. But because Brandon lives, you see, in Florida, where it's 90 degrees and he's sitting there gloating and I'm sitting here watching it rain and be bleak.
That's right.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your website, strangenotions.com.
Sure. I created this website a few years ago as a response to a lot of the really disappointing dialogue that I was seeing online between Catholics and atheists. I would go to atheist websites and it would just be full of mockery and scorn and people just taking pot shots against religion. There was no substantial discussion. But then I would also go to Catholic blogs and websites and see almost the equal but opposite reaction. It would just be Catholics mocking and dismissing atheists. And it made me think, like, if I was an atheist and I went to any of these Catholic websites and scrolled down to the comment boxes, it would only solidify my atheism. There would be nothing that would draw me in because nobody's willing to have a serious, charitable discussion about these things. So I wanted to fill a gap there and set up a place kind of without being too audacious, an oasis online where Catholics and atheists could come and have serious dialogue about the big questions of life. I also realized early on that although I had read tons of books on a lot of these subjects, natural theology, morality, things like that, I knew that I didn't have the expertise to write all the articles and keep the site going, and nor did I have the time. And so what I sought to do from the very beginning was attract a world-class collection of experts, both Catholic and atheist, who could contribute high-level content. So on the Catholic side, we got about 30 different contributors, including yourself. We got people like Dr. Peter Kraft, Father Robert Spitzer, Bishop Barron, several other Catholic artists and scientists and scholars and bloggers, all sorts of great people. And then on the atheist side, I attracted some of the top atheist thinkers and bloggers and did different interviews with them, asking them why they're atheist, how they became atheist, that kind of stuff. And quickly, within a matter of months, really, this site just really took off. It was shared by a lot of Catholic sources, but I was even pleasantly surprised to see it shared among many atheist blogs and websites. And it got to the point, the climax, I think, was about 2 or 3 months ago when one of these ranking aggregator sites that puts out regular like top 20, top 30 sorts of lists, they had a list that was the top 30 websites that all atheists must follow. Top 30 websites that all atheists must follow. And they not only listed the sites, they ranked them. So it was a legitimate ranking. And Strange Notions was number 4. Number 1 was like the Friendly Atheist. Number 2 was the Reddit atheist stream. And then number 3 was an atheist parenting blog. And then number 4 was Strange Notions. So to me, that kind of validated all the hard work of the past few years, that it's become a hub that both Catholics and atheists can come to have serious, fruitful dialogue.
That is so cool. You know, and I got to say, since you work with Bishop Barron, that interview that Bishop Barron did, what's the guy's name?
Dave Rubin.
Dave Rubin. That interview that he did with Dave Rubin, I thought was phenomenal. I thought it was so great. And I loved the response that you got from atheists. And it cracked me up, you know, that it was like the response that Jesus got, you know.
Yeah.
The atheists were like, I had no idea. This gives me, you know, real respect for what the Catholic faith has to say. I never considered this before, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The only people who were upset with that interview were like super Catholics, right?
Yeah. To use the Jesus example, it was the small group of religious elite who were most angry about the things he was saying. But maybe to even shift the parallel, I think another good example is St. Paul on the Areopagus, because to me, the reactions Bishop Barron got were similar to those of the Greek philosophers listening to Paul proclaim the gospel for the first time. They would maybe not be totally convinced, but they would say things like, what you're saying is interesting. In fact, that's where we get the name of our Strange Notions website, is from that episode in Acts 17, because his listeners say, you bring some strange notions to our ears and we want to hear more later. So I think a lot of the atheists that saw that interview between Bishop Barron and Dave Rubin had the same reaction. Right. You know, they maybe didn't go all the way from atheism to Catholicism in an hour-long interview, but it opened the door at least a little wider.
Well, this comports, you know, profoundly with, you're probably familiar with Sherry Waddell.
Oh, yeah.
And her tremendous, incredibly important book, Forming Intentional Disciples. Right. And what Forming Intentional Disciples talks about are these thresholds of conversion. And so people, you know, they move from trust to curiosity, to openness, to seeking, and then ultimately to intentional discipleship. And the work that you do and the work that Bishop Barron does is very much about sometimes moving from people from radical distrust simply to trust, or, you know, maybe across the bridge from trust to curiosity and openness.
Yes.
And that is nothing to sneeze at. That is that's vital work.
I think those categories are exactly the right one. The thresholds of openness and of curiosity. And Sherry in her book talks about one of the required facets of moving across those two thresholds is finding a positive image of Christianity. You know, maybe it's a Christian friend who they respect or they like, maybe it's a priest or a good experience at a church, but they need to find some positive experience of Christianity in order to move into the trust phase. And I think for many people online who are of no faith, maybe they're skeptics, maybe they're former Catholics, Catholics. Maybe they're the religious nuns, the N-O-N-E-S. I think Bishop Barron has become that for a lot of people. He's become, you know, the first serious-minded, smart, articulate Christian leader they've encountered. And for a lot of people, that's attractive because they see that and they say, well, you know, I thought Christianity was just stupid and mindless. But if it's like that, then maybe I could be open to something like that.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of, I think, one of the things that deeply attracted me to the faith when I was starting to look at the faith, and I saw a lot with Dominicans, was precisely that Catholic faith, properly understood, doesn't have to be afraid of everything.
Yeah.
And so many people treat the faith as though, you know, it's fragile, and if it gets challenged by something, then it'll just shatter. And what Bishop Barron does is he presents a faith that's not afraid of the world. And is ready to engage the world and is capable of making intelligent distinctions and doesn't have to play by tribal labels and all the rest of it. And, you know, I love that. I find it so, so refreshing, you know, and I think that that's what Dave Rubin was shocked by.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're completely right.
Yeah. So, God bless Strange Notions or Stranger Things, because I'm still not entirely convinced that it's not an attempt to dialogue with the monsters from the Upside Down. I don't know, but it's just, you know, it's something to think about.
I was thrilled when Netflix decided to give us a boost of brand connection there.
That's right. All you need now is like a bald 11-year-old girl with mysterious powers.
Are you offering one?
No, I don't have any on hand. But my granddaughter will be 11 in 4 years, and maybe that we'll revisit that. Michael, you had something that you wanted to talk with Brandon about.
Oh yeah, so quite a while ago, I want to say it was only a couple weeks, but my memory's shot. But I recall reading your book, Saints and Social Justice, A Guide to Changing the World, which caught my eye because it had Mother Teresa, John Paul II, and Dorothy Day, who are three of my heroes, on the cover. So, hey, why not read it? But I was wanting to know what a lot of people in America, where everything is so divisive politically, a lot of people think of social justice as not really a Catholic issue as much as a left-wing issue. What prompted you to want to write that book?
Well, I think, like you, Michael, I was really disturbed by the reality that so many people on the right seem to dismiss Catholic social teaching as just being, a liberal, politically motivated ploy to introduce communism or socialism into the church. But at the same time, I was equally perturbed by many people on the so-called left who took Catholic social teaching only piecemeal and left out many of the very serious and important parts of it, so particularly the defense of the dignity of life at all stages. And so I realized that we need the whole thing. We need the whole Catholic social teaching thing, and we needed to bridge this great divide between the so-called left and the right, or to say it another way, between the so-called peace and justice Catholics and the pro-life Catholics. To me, it's a tragedy that we have this purported divide. And so I wanted to write the book to, if nothing else, act as a bridge between these two groups.
Absolutely. And we're on a break. We will be right back.
Yes, you're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Michael Litchens and Mr. Brandon Vaught. And we will be back to talk about Claritas U and all kinds of other fun stuff right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Dot, your host Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Michael Litchens, and also we are here today with our special guest, Brandon Vaught. Brandon Vaught is the author of, well, of 7 books, including Return, he's written a terrific book on social justice, the Church of New Media, all kinds of stuff. And we're here today talking with him about, among other things, a new project called Claritas U. But before we get to that, Michael, you were in the middle of a thought.
So we were talking about social justice, and Brandon, you were going over how much you wanted to see that both sides really were not quite getting social justice, and that might explain why your book got both endorsements from Bishop Barron and Father Martin, two people that many of us think of on different sides of the political divide.
Sure.
And you do continue that theme throughout your book. Particularly, I wanted to ask you about, in your section, The Dignity of Work and the Rights of Workers, you use the example of St. Benedict of Nursia. So how does Father Benedict tell us about the dignity of work?
Yeah, well, of course, you have the famous Benedictine motto, Ora et Labora, so prayer and work. Interestingly, it's not Ora est Labora, prayer, work is prayer, you know, which a lot of us Catholics often like to say, oh, my work is my prayer. You know, I don't pray that much, or I don't go to Mass that much because my work or my ministry is my prayer. The Benedictines say, no, work and prayer, work and prayer. They're two ways of not just connecting with God, but living out our humanity, fulfilling our vocation and our dignity. But one thing I found interesting when researching that chapter was, especially in the writings of John Paul II, he makes very clear that work is a good thing. You know, we're often tempted to think that work was just something that was a result of the fall and it was a punishment for us disobeying God. But from the beginning, and John Paul goes deeply into this in his writings, from the beginning, even before the fall, work was something that God commissioned to man in order to live out his dignity, in order to give him, put it simply, a job to do, something that would fulfill and carry forward creation. And so I think the Benedictines catch that and share it better than any other group in the Catholic Church, especially when you look at their developments in the medieval times, of the way that the monasteries there cultivated the land agriculturally, the way that they introduced many novel and innovative ways of caring for land and animals. So I've always thought the Benedictines were a great model of work as a dignified pursuit.
Fair enough. Yeah. And I think that that's true. Michael, was there anything else you wanted?
No, that's what I wanted to cover for today.
Okay. Well, I wanted to spend some time on your new project, Claritas U. You've done a series of videos now, which you can go find on YouTube. If you go, just go to YouTube and then put in Brandon's name, Brandon Vaught, V-O-G-T, Brandon with an O. And you can find, well, copious videos, actually. but among them are is a kind of a series of videos that kind of roll out Claritas U. I was wondering if you could talk about what you're up to with Claritas.
Sure. So this is a project that's been months and months in the making, and it's the result of me dialoguing with lots and lots of my followers, my fans, my friends, asking them, what's the big thing that you're struggling with right now as a Catholic? And by far, the most popular response I got was some version of, I feel like the culture is pressing against me. You know, we've seen a slew of new books from people like Archbishop Chaput and Rod Dreher and Tony Esselin, commenting on the so-called new alarmism, that the culture around us is increasingly out of step with Christian values. And so what's the response? Do we flee? Do we respond? Do we engage? A lot of people are giving a lot of interesting answers to that. But I wanted to address the main problem there that a lot of people are feeling, that, you know, on almost every issue across the board, whether it be marriage or sexuality or theology or morality in general, we feel like the culture is increasingly at odds with our faith, and not just ambivalent, but antagonistic. And so a lot of Catholics are worried. They're afraid. They're worried that, especially when they're with friends or family, if these topics come up, they won't know what to say. They'll say the wrong thing in the wrong way at the wrong time. They'll hurt their relationships with friends and family, or they'll just sound nervous and confused and give an embarrassed response. So I wanted to put together something that would help Catholics to discuss the most contentious hot button issues out there. And that's kind of how ClaritasU emerged. So it's basically a membership site for Catholics where we go through a series of courses on each of these topics, and I help Catholics to get clarity about three things. First of all, the Catholic view on this particular issue. Second of all, the best objections to the Catholic view. And third of all, how to respond to those objections. So the goal is that whenever these topics come up in conversation, you'll be so equipped and well prepared that you can't help but feel confident. And I'm talking about some of the, you know, hardest, most scary subjects around, things like atheism or same-sex marriage or transgenderism or abortion. So if you're a Catholic and these things make you nervous, then ClaritasU might be a great place for you.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, it is, because it is, I think, something that a lot of people get kind of paralyzed about because we're stuck in the middle of these culture wars. And so often, really, the only instruction that people have in how to respond to these kinds of things generally come to them from television or water cooler talk, and not from the teaching of the church, because there's nobody teaching them the teaching of the church. So that's good. Good for you. I'm glad you're doing this. It's really important. So how do people access this?
Good question. So you can learn more about it and sign up at claritasu.com. That's U like the letter U as in university. So claritasu.com. But the important thing is I'm only opening up the enrollment for ClaritasU for 1 week, and it ends in just 2 days. So it's been open for 4 or 5 days now. It closes on Thursday, and it's not going to open again until September. Now, the reason I'm doing that is because for this project especially, I don't want to spend months and months and hours trying to attract new members and promote it and market it. I really want to spend most of the time helping the people who have signed up. So to do that, we're only opening for 1 week. After that, the doors close. And then the rest of the time here coming up is going to spend helping those people get clear about these issues. So if you want to become more confident and clear, just go to claritasu.com and sign up today.
Cool. That is super cool. I'm so glad you're doing this. My experience has been every time I do catechesis on what the church teaches, the response from Catholics is always surprise that this makes so much sense and is easy to understand. Well, and this is especially true when you start talking about places where the church is teaching hits on social issues. Because, you know, talk about your experience of writing the book on Catholic social teaching and the response that you got.
Yeah, you know, I think with my earlier books on the church and new media, and I wrote some stuff for Bishop Barron on evangelization, I think naturally most of my audience tended to lean more to the right, to be more conservative Catholics. And so it was a bit of a surprise when I released this book on the saints and social justice, especially because, and this was intentional, when we collected endorsements for the book, we intentionally sought out church leaders on the left and on the right, you know, so on the back cover, there's a blurb from Bishop Barron and there's a blurb from Father Jim Martin. And, you know, there's blurbs from the presidents of Catholic Relief Services and Catholic Charities. And then there's blurbs, you know, from people from National Catholic Register and Our Sunday Visitor. And so the hope was that we would show Catholics that Catholic social teaching is a thing for all Catholics. It's not just pigeonholed in one political or social or ecclesial group. And so that was my goal. However, after we released the book, I quickly found out how polarizing it would be on both sides. You know, I heard from, I told you during one of the breaks here that when I released my follow-up book called Return, How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church, I got an email from a parent who said at the beginning of the email that their child had drifted away from the church and they were looking for helpful resources. They stumbled across my book, but they would not buy it because they saw that I had written a book about social justice. And so I probably wasn't a trustworthy source.
I wonder why their child drifted away from the church.
Yeah, no, it pained me. It pained me because I thought, man, poor child is going to suffer because of this silly dismissal. But to be fair, I heard many of the same things in the other direction too. You know, I heard many things from people on the left who would reject the Saints of Social Justice book because it had right-leaning endorsers. So right. I've always abided by the Chesterton principle that if you're criticized for mutually contradictory reasons, then you're probably in the right place.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it is true. You know, you run into this. I mean, I've had. Well, you know how it goes. Yeah, I've had people attack me as a liberal or advocating the church's whole social doctrine, and then you get people attacking you as a conservative because you're opposed to abortion. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we are up against the break, but we'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We are here today with Michael Litchens and Brandon Vaught, and we will be back right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Michael Litchens and Mr. Brandon Vaught. Brandon Vaught is he works with Bishop Barron. He's the communications guy for Word on Fire and author of a bunch of books. Just never sleeps. Just the human dynamo, always doing amazing things. And now the founder of Claritas U, which is there to help you as a Catholic to know how to articulate your faith when you're in those weird social situations where you don't know what to say and feel like you should just kind of sit on your hands and keep, you know, don't make direct eye contact and then no one will ask you what you think.
Right.
Talk a bit more about Claritas.
Sure. So Claritas U is an online membership site for Catholics who want to get clear about their faith. And we do that through several means. The main core of the site are our courses. So we have multiple courses, each lasting 2 months long. And within that 2 month span, you get clear about particular hot button topics. So the first two topics we're looking at are atheism and same-sex marriage. So if either of those topics get you shaking in your boots whenever they come up with friends or family, you know, if a friend has ever suggested that there's no evidence for God and you just don't know what to say, or if a family member has wondered why you oppose same-sex marriage and you have no good reason other than to say, well, that's just what I believe, or, well, that's just what the Catholic Church teaches, or that's just what the Bible says, then these courses will really, really help you a lot. And we particularly chose those two issues because I think those are the ones, based on what I've heard from other Catholics, that give us the most trouble, that we feel most nervous and afraid and scared to discuss. So the idea is that if we can get clear and confident about those two, then we can handle any other issue as well. We'll be confident that we can learn the ins and outs of other difficult issues like abortion or contraception or Jesus's resurrection or trusting the Bible or all these many other issues. So that's the plan for Claritas U. We just opened up the site a few days ago. We already have hundreds of people that are pouring in and going through the videos. And awesome. I'm really glad to hear from a lot of them who have already said, you know, I'm already feeling more confident. I've tried out some of these tips and tactics and they already seem to be bearing fruit. So if those topics keep you worried and afraid, then please check out Claritas U.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, I love that the internet makes this kind of thing possible, you know, that anybody can just go online and find these kinds of resources. And it's just, yeah. And also, anybody can make these kinds of resources. I mean, this is one of the things that the internet has really done is it's made it possible for, you know, essentially your YouTube channel is your own network.
Yeah.
You can broadcast whatever you want to whoever you want. And you don't have to be worth $1 billion in order to do it. That's been one of the great, the great democratizing effects of the internet. There are also regrettable effects to the democratizing power of the internet, you know.
Well, it's like any form of media. I mean, it comes with great advances and great drawbacks. But I think for us as Catholics, we need to realize, and this is critically important, that the people who stand against the Catholic Church, atheists, seekers, agnostics, even Protestants, many of them, are using these tools to discount the Catholic faith. And so we got to be in there. If you look at all the surveys of young people, especially who have left the church, many of them cite the internet as one of the main influences that drove them away from the church because they would see like one of the new atheists on YouTube, or they would go to some discussion forums and people plant seeds of doubt. And so the internet played a role in them leaving the faith. And so we Catholics need to use it to strengthen our faith, but to draw other people back as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that can be done too. I mean, I've seen people, you know, I got friends in New Zealand actually who are Catholic today because they watched arguments between Protestants and Catholics on the internet.
It's great.
And so that happens too. I mean, yeah. And that's, you know, that's such an important part of the work that we can do as lay people out on the internet, is we can bear witness to the faith in an era of lies.
Yeah.
And so important, you know, and important, you know, to provide a counter witness. You know, the worst danger that the church faces, that Christians face to their faith, in my experience, has not typically been atheists. It's bad Christians.
Yeah.
You know, a bad witness to the faith can do far more damage than an atheist can do, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I mean, that's been echoed by religious leaders up and down the centuries, that we're our own worst enemy, and it's Christians that are the greatest argument against Christianity. There's Gandhi's old line. We need to step up our game. We need to become saints.
Yeah. Yeah. And so again, this is one of the reasons that I love your approach, and I love what Bishop Barron is doing, because you're fearless. And so much of the witness of the faith comes from Christians who talk as though they're afraid that the faith is fragile.
Yep.
And who speak out of that fear, you know. And so I'm constantly hearing people warning me about persecution. Jesus never warns about persecution. He says, yeah, you're going to get persecuted. So, you know, get ready for that. But he doesn't spend any time worrying about it. What he warns about is seduction. That's the thing that Jesus says, be careful of that. Don't fear him who can kill the body. Fear him who can destroy both body and soul in hell. How do you destroy body and soul in hell? By being seduced.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, so fantastic. Well, we just got a couple of minutes left. So, Brandon, I'm a new Christian, and I want to do what you're doing.
And they gave you a radio show?
Yeah, I know. They're just handing these things out like, you know, like popcorn, man. I don't know. I was just minding my own business, and Leo Brown called me and said, I don't know you. Would you like to do a radio show?
It was at your confirmation. They offered you a radio show.
Yeah, yeah. That's what they do now. You know, it's one of the gifts of confirmation. But I would say, so I'm a new Christian, and I'm looking at some way of trying to be a faithful disciple and bear witness to the faith like you do. How do I do that?
Oh, that's a loaded question. It's in essence, how do I become a better Christian? And I would give all the age-old answers. Pray, 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 pray. Read the scriptures. Find other Christians who you admire and emulate them. Be discipled by them. Get involved with your parish. Frequent the sacraments. So those are all the ordinary ways that we grow as a Christian that I'd recommend. But maybe to lift it up a level, I'd also add that the internet offers an amazing treasure trove of resources to strengthen your faith. You know, we got good blogs and websites like the ones you and I participate in. There are so many YouTube videos and podcasts and resources. We live in a golden age of, I think, catechetical opportunity. That doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean that there isn't bad stuff out there too. But if you want to grow in your faith, especially as a new Christian, you've never had more available to you than you do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. There's just, it's like drinking from a fire hose. I mean, the real trick is like figuring out from the vast assortment of stuff out there, you know, what's reliable. Sure. And of course, you know, as Catholics, one of the things that we got is this magisterium that is super useful if people would only listen to it.
Yeah. It's almost it has some sort of divine authority that might be worth hearing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, it goes back to that. So, you know, he who listens to you listens to me, says Jesus, talking to the apostles. And by extension, of course, this means the magisterial teaching of the church down the ages. She won't steer you wrong. And it's remarkable how easily comprehensible church teaching is if you learn what the jargon means.
Sure.
That's the trick. You know, the church has this genius for taking simple biblical ideas and then putting them in an incomprehensible jargon sometimes, you know. But that's why books like your Saints and Catholic Social Teaching are so important.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do in that book particularly, was to bring what can admittedly be a difficult collection of teachings to understand down to a more accessible level. But, you know, I will say, and this is a hot button point for Bishop Barron too, is let's not dumb down the faith. You know, let's remember that we got a smart tradition. You know, some of our documents are admittedly hard to read, but no harder than, say, an undergraduate math or science text. And so if we trust people to be able to handle complex political documents and discussions, or, you know, if people are engaging economic questions at a decently high level, let's let them do that for religion and philosophy and some of the more meaningful subjects. So if you're a new Christian, and I used to say this, you know, if there's something, there's the Catechism of the Catholic Church, but it might be a little too hard for you. So maybe start with this, this, or this. But lately I've just been saying, no, go get the Catechism, read the Catechism. It's maybe at a high school or college level, but you put some time and work into it. If you can understand the Catechism, you got the Catholic faith.
Yeah. It's one of the things I always appreciated about Scott Hahn, was that he didn't dumb things down, and he expected hard things from his students, and they come through.
Yep.
People like to be challenged, you know, and so this is something that Pope John Paul understood in his World Youth Days. That instead of having World Youth Days and getting together with the youth and saying, they're there, everything is hard and I understand, so don't try. He was like, this is a really hard faith. It demands huge things of you. And youth responded volcanically to that.
Oh, thank you.
Because, yeah. So bravo for what you're doing. I want to thank you so much for what you're doing. I want to thank you for being on the show today. I also want to thank Michael Litchens for being here today. Our producer was Danny Head, and I will be back tomorrow with Mr. Rod Bennett. Until then, have a grand evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.